This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We got to someone now on the hotline, on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline, who is as dialed in as anyone when it comes to ripping the media, because he's ripped me many times. Richard Deitch, we thank you for coming on the program and giving us and being generous with your time. How are you, Richard?
Hi, Richard.
Yeah, first of all, I feel really bad for Les. His back must be hurting from carrying Anthony Lima for the last couple of weeks.
Couple of years.
It's true. It's true. Richard, I used to call Les's show. Hold on, Richard. I used to call Les's show when I was 13 years old and my voice was 2 octaves higher.
You've been annoying Cleveland listeners for a long time, Lima. That doesn't surprise me.
That's very true. All right, Richard, we had this discussion in here today, and we'll get to the All-Star game and the festivities and, you know, how healthy all of that stuff is. On the network right now, but Les is a huge baseball guy. He's a pretty big football guy, but soccer, he could take it or leave it. But even Les Levine was watching the World Cup Championship on Sunday. I was watching it. It was to me, it was fascinating. I don't know anything about soccer. My analysis basically is devolved into, hey, go get it. Come on, what are you doing? Like, that's all I know. I don't know anything about soccer, but I watched it, and I was pretty mesmerized by all the talent on the pitch, as they say. How big was this in the United States, even without Team USA?
Really big. Surprisingly big for a number of reasons. One, keep in mind that the start time of this game was 11 o'clock Eastern. So that's not that's never going to be sort of a high viewership window. But Fox ended up drawing a little shade under 18 million. I haven't seen the Telemundo number yet, but I think it was 8 or 9 million. I have to double check. But the point is that roughly 24, 25 million Americans watched France play Croatia on Sunday at either 11 o'clock Eastern, 8 o'clock Pacific. It's a really, really good number. It was down from Germany-Argentina 4 years ago, but that soccer match had a better time slot. I think that started at 3 p.m. Eastern. The ratings and the viewership for the World Cup this year were down pretty significantly over 2014, but the reasons for that, you sort of hit on one, is no U.S. national team. So even though the U.S., generally speaking, usually goes out after the group round, the games that the U.S. plays in, you know, draw 15 million, 18 million, 19 million, so it just raises the averages up. And then the second reason is the Russian, the time zone that these games were in, because the games were in Russia, were really not advantageous for Fox for the U.S. That's why we saw a lot of games really early, and that's the reason, those two factors, that viewership was down. But if you're a soccer fan, you have to feel pretty good, because I think it shows growth. And I think it shows that guys like you, casual fans, are willing to tune into a World Cup final where they really have no connection. I mean, unless you're a big soccer fan, you're not really going to be into the French national team or the Croatian national team. But the viewership numbers were really good. I mean, you know, the viewership numbers were akin to a Sunday afternoon NFL game at 1 o'clock.
By now, shouldn't the ratings be, or the participation and the interest in the game of soccer be higher by now in the United States?
Well, that's, you know, I am at least sort of a soccer head, so I love the sport, so I'm certainly biased towards the sport. But that's always been – this is sort of a historic debate when it comes to soccer. Ever since I was a kid, and I'm sure Lima and Les, you know this as well, you've been hearing, like, soccer is the sport of the future. This is the next great sport in the United States. The demographics, immigrants, second-generation immigrants, sort of it all fits. But it hasn't happened yet in terms of viewership numbers, and it hasn't happened yet in terms of mass participation. I still hold out that, given the demographics of the country's ethnicity sort of points it in a place where soccer should be eventually a big four sport. In my opinion, it will never, certainly in our lifetimes, pass the NFL or college football, the NBA, probably Major League Baseball too. So let's call it a big five sport then.
Richard, it should be
there, but it hasn't happened yet, and I'm not really sure of the reason why. I'm not exactly sure why it hasn't translated, given that the demographics of the country would suggest that soccer should be bigger than it is.
You mentioned a moment ago the start times of the games and all. Is there an answer to baseball as is how to get better at a certain time? I mean, you've always said the kids on the East Coast don't see the end of the games, kids on the West Coast don't see the beginning. Is there an answer to it, or is it just an untenable situation?
Yeah, I'm not like one of those old men screams at the crowd or screams at the, you know, get off my lawn. We got a guy in New York, Phil Mushnick, who's sort of been screaming about start times being too late for kids for a long time. But, you know, I live in the reality of networks and broadcast television entities who pay, you know, millions, in some cases billions of dollars for the rights to sports. And what they're ultimately going to do is they're going to start games which bring in their potential largest audience. And generally speaking, that's starting an event at either 8 or 9 o'clock Eastern time to bring in people who are home in the East or the Midwest, and then obviously get people who are coming home from work on the West Coast. I don't think – listen, as much as, you know, I would love every 6- and 7-year-old to be able to watch every World Series game or every playoff game, it's just – it's not a reality of today's economics. So, plus, the only thing I would say is, like – you know, maybe you can try to figure out something special where maybe some of these playoff games get an earlier start time in the afternoon. And we do see that, you know, certainly in the opening rounds, you know, when TBS and Turner has games, you know, you do get early afternoon games and kids could watch. But, yeah, I don't mean to be knocking on the kids of America, but it's not a birthright to watch sporting events in the afternoon.
No, but it made me a fan for life because it was.
I understand that,
but
I would say this: there are a lot of opportunities for kids to still watch games in the middle of the day. Where it might not exist is World Series Game 3. You may just have to ask your parents, or hopefully your parents will let you watch games and stay up late. The economic reality of sports television, particularly linear sports television, is these. Entities which pay millions and billions of dollars are going to start games at the most advantageous time to them. What the networks would say is, hey, if baseball charges us less money, we'll do doubleheaders. We'll put the games on at 2 o'clock. But, you know, Rob Manfred and the rest of his crew are not going to give Fox, Turner, and ESPN any kind of reduction. So it's not going to change.
Richard Deitch joining us on the hotline. You can check out his podcast, Sports Media with Richard Deitch, wherever you can download the podcast. Also, The Athletic, where all his notes columns, terrific stuff when you're keeping tabs on all the media like I know Richard is. So Les and I have been debating the merits of Summer League basketball. I'm a basketball junkie. I'll watch all these games. I've seen almost all of them. There's been more televised this year than ever before. You rewind 10 years ago, nobody even knew about the NBA Summer League. I know content is king right now, and they're trying to fill up space, and there's only so many debate shows you can have. But, Richard, are you surprised right now at the kind of the prominent spot that Summer League is getting?
No, Lyman, this is where you and I are we're brothers in arms here, because I love the NBA as well. By the way, I love LeBron James. I'm very bummed for Cleveland. I knew he was going to leave, but it still bums me out.
Thanks for that.
Just a perfect fit. No, I'm not. You know, the one thing there is ESPN has made a significant decision, and they made this a couple of years ago philosophically, that they were really going to go all in on the NBA. I mean, even more than they did before. And they were going to use their shoulder programming, so, you know, shows like First Take and The Jump and SportsCenter, to go really, really hard on the NBA. And part of that decision is to go very heavy on Summer League, which essentially is an extension of the NBA silly season, which a lot of NBA fans, and I know, Lima, you know this, would say is sometimes more fun, the off season, than the regular season itself, just because of all the player movement that's existed over the last couple of years, particularly major guys, you know, Paul George, LeBron James, Chris Paul. I mean, in basketball, stars have gone to other teams. It doesn't happen nearly as much in football. Happens obviously in baseball a little bit, but, you know, nothing like that happens in the NFL. So, no, I'm not surprised. I think there's a lot of young people, television viewers in particular, between the ages of like 20 and 45, and very heavy male demographic, heavy disposable incomes are really high. So while the ratings are not going to be, you know, crazy high, I think last time I saw, ESPN was averaging about 185,000 viewers per Summer League game. But those numbers are really if you go deep into the numbers, the demos are great. You know, 25 to 54 men with a lot of income, a lot of education. Those are really good advertising numbers for ESPN. So I'm not surprised at all. Now, again, sometimes these games, in all honesty, are unwatchable. You know, they're not always great in terms of a viewership product. But if you're an NBA fan, and if one of your guys is playing in Summer League, let's say, you know, you're a fan of the Phoenix Suns and you want to see how DeAndre Ayton is doing, it's a pretty cool thing just to be able to, you know, watch that guy and his development in the summer. So, you know, you hit it. Like, content is king. This is live games in a stretch where nothing is going on. I mean, tomorrow, I think we'd all agree, maybe the deadest time in sports, basically the deadest day, and this is one of the deadest weeks outside of the All-Star game. So if you can get any kind of live event, and that's what the Summer League is, you know, people, networks in particular will love it because it's just, it's live programming at a time when, you know, a lot of people are essentially just waiting for college football and the NFL to start.
All right, Richard, we appreciate you eating up valuable segments during the deadest time of the sports calendar. Thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
All right, there he is. Richard Deitch, join us on North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.